Hey, everybody, an advertiser-free episode of My Conversation in Menlo Park, San Jose, Silicon Valley, brought to you advertiser-free of those of you that support us, charliekirk.com/support. I love to hear your thoughts from this, freedom@charliekirk.com. I take questions near the end of the speech. You're going to love those. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
What a great turnout. You know, I was told California's all locked down and everything, and it's like freedom's alive here in the Bay Area, right? My goodness. It's an honor to be here at my friend's church, Pastor Mike McClure, who is... he is one of the most courageous pastors in America. And for those of you that have never been to this church before, you're watching online, you don't know about Pastor Mike McClure... he opened his church in an act of boldness of his faith, and he has been attacked and smeared and persecuted by this local government at every turn, and he has refused to bend the knee to the secular government agencies. And I've gotten to know Mike and a lot of the other Calvary pastors across California. And for those of you that know Mike, he really believes that the Lord is in charge, the church is essential. And this was a testing moment for a lot of different churches in the last year. And it would have been very easy in this community, which is one of the least churched communities in all of America, to just shut down and just say, you know what, I'm going to go turn our church into a YouTube channel. But, you know, I talked to Mike, and Mike said, you know, Charlie, we're facing millions of dollars of fines. We're facing all these different pieces of backlash. By the way, if you're BLM Incorporated, you go burn down half a city, but you can't open the church. But he said, all of that is worth it because we have brought hundreds of people to Christ because we have in-person church, not just the online stuff. And it's an incredible thing. And so we wanted to do an event here in the Bay Area. And what is a church? That's a great question, right? Well, a church should be a lot of different things. And it should also be what we're experiencing tonight. It's the ecclesia, as Christ said clearly in the scriptures, which means public square. What's happening in the community around me? How does my faith and the word of God intersect? How does it communicate? What am I supposed to do about all the issues around me? And what better place to have an event like this than at a church? And I'm going to say this as lovingly as I can. If your pastor or church are still closed, it's time to find a new church, everybody. It's time to find a church that is open and is doing the right thing. And so I could not think higher of Mike McClure, and he's with his family, and he deserves to be with his family after the year that he has had. And so we're pitching in for him tonight. And so I want to talk a little bit about the lockdowns, because I think the lockdowns will go down as probably the worst mistake done domestically here in American history. The damage is beyond anything that we're even going to be able to measure for the next decade. The mental health issues, suicide, small business closures, drug usage, alcoholism, an entire lost generation when it comes to literacy rates, the capacity to be able to advance from one grade to the other. And the question is, did it make any difference? And so that's an appropriate question to ask. And this speech, you know, we've been doing our Generation Free Tour, and I want to thank our amazing Turning Point USA purple shirt wearing freedom fighters here. These are heroes right here. I'm telling you, they do an amazing job. And so we've been traveling the country from Missouri to Kentucky to Oklahoma to Tennessee. We were in Vegas a couple nights ago. And now we're here in California. And California is interesting. And this is going to be a different speech than any other speech I gave across the country, because I'm going to be more California specific and centric. for a variety of reasons, you are the largest state. And I think there's a lot of lessons here. And there's also a lot of things happening here that are worthy of praise and also obvious correction. Oh my gosh. Not going to focus on much of the corrections. I think that's rather self-evident. And if not, we'll try to enlighten you tonight on that. But this is a really interesting point. And again, our media is so dishonest that this should be communicated on every single news channel, which is, did the lockdowns actually work? And so you have a state like California that has the largest population in the country, that has less of an elderly population than Florida. And California decided to sustain its lockdowns throughout the summer, fall, and winter when Florida opened fully in late May and early June. Who did better? Well, Florida, with more elderly people, with open schools and open businesses, has a better rate in hospitalizations, a slightly worse death rate, slightly, but if you factor in age, an actual better death rate if you factor over 65, which was always the focal point of this virus, and it should be. But Florida has something that California doesn't. Had open schools, open businesses. They didn't lose a generation of children to self-inflicted harm. Their alcoholism and mental health issues have stabilized since last May and June. People are flooding to California, and flooding out of California, flooding to Florida. And the question is, what's the difference? And so there's a great quote by, people say it's either Socrates or Aristotle. It doesn't matter because the quote is four words and it's phenomenal. Power shows the man. So if you want to see who someone really is, give them a bunch of power and put them in a pressure-filled situation. You're going to find a lot about that person really quickly. So look at California and Florida. They both have rather dense populations, which we were told is where the virus is going to spread the most. They both have elderly populations. They both have a lot of different issues to deal with, diverse populations, massive populations. Power shows the man. Which leader handled this crisis with maturity, trust to their citizens, wanting to open up their economy, have economic growth and development? It's not even close. Florida is the state of the future, and your governor's now under a recall threat. Now, we're a 501c3, so I'm not going to say anything organizational about taking a stance on the recall. I will say this, though, personally and broadly. It's an awesome thing you have the capacity to recall a governor. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, well, what difference does it make? Because it might win, it might not win. I said, oh my goodness, you're not understanding this. Every hour on the hour, you are now living rent-free in Gavin Newsom's head. Every hour on the hour, Gavin Newsom now has to go re-raise a bunch of money, go justify his awful policies, travel around the state, go hand out more crony corporate favors, which will backfire on him. You guys are playing offense here in the state of California. And that's something that all of you deserve to be thanked and encouraged for. Because it would have been very easy for all of you that helped collect signatures, I know a lot of you did, for the recall effort, to just give up. It would have been very easy for you just to say, you know what, we have no choice or no chance. So what makes the American system of government different is that our revolution was not about tea, it was not about taxes, it was about consent of the governed. Basically, you have no right to rule me unless I give you permission to do that. And so Governor Ron DeSantis understood this, and he said, okay, we know how this virus operates. We are going to focus our attention on elderly communities and senior citizens. We're going to open up the rest of the economy. And if you want to do something stupid, then you're going to have to pay a price for that. So we opened it up, and the success speaks for itself. And actually, in a strange turn of events, it turns out that certain communities had herd immunity, and they were able to actually better fight the virus by not having the lockdowns. Go figure. It's the exact opposite than what Dr. Anthony Fauci, who should have been fired a long time ago, by the way, and what he said. And so we're here in this state, and I think it's a really exciting time if you live in California for a lot of different reasons. Well, first of all, it can't get much worse. I mean, it's kind of one of those own theories. Once you hit rock bottom, you can then build back, not better, but you can build back up, right? But it's also exciting because the left has controlled everything in this state. And the results speak for themselves. The results speak for themselves where you've aborted more children than the entire population of Canada since 1970. You lead in homelessness, most unequal state, small business closures, drug overdoses and homelessness. And there's a reason for this. Well, there's a lot of different reasons for this, but one of the major ones is the left took taking over institutions very seriously in the state. Public sector teacher unions, civil service unions, our education system, Hollywood, mass media, and of course, open borders and foolish immigration policies played a part in this as well. But now the people of California, in both parties, by the way, are saying, the person in charge is not representing my values. And the fact that this recall is happening is a really big deal. I hope you realize the rest of the country is watching this very closely. Because this is considered to be the most liberal state in the country. I actually don't think it is. I don't. I actually think the state is far more conservative than people realize. I think there are certain pockets that are way off the grid. But I actually think that the people of California generally want some corrective mechanism to the radicalism that is ruling this state. So I'll give you an example of this. So there's all this ridiculous outrage around what's happening in Georgia right now, which, by the way, is a very boring and vanilla bill. By the way, they should go much farther in voter reforms in Georgia. That's like a good starting point. And if you read the activist media, they say, oh, you're not allowed to give out water. First of all, it's a complete lie. It's a total lie. If you are a political group of any different persuasion, you're not allowed to give out anything of value to people waiting in line. And by the way, just as a side note, I never knew voting was so dehydrating. Like this idea that it's so incredibly, but you could still, in the bill, it says you can have water receptacles. President Joe Biden just lied pathologically about it. It shortens the primaries from 9 weeks to 5 weeks. And the big reform that they're most upset about is the fact that you have to prove who you are when you send in a mail-in absentee ballot. As if this is, in Joe Biden's own words, Jim Crow 2.0. That is his way to define it. And the reason they're doing this is very clear and very obvious, is that they know that if states start to reform their elections and Georgia turns to Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, all of a sudden this mail-in deluge, which is their gateway to endless power, might actually be put in jeopardy. Because we do need to fix the way we do elections in our country. And we need to... They're completely broken. And so you look at what... So in Georgia, there's outrage from Delta, Coca-Cola, Major League Baseball. I want all of you to try something for me. I want you to go to an Oakland A's game and try to get will call tickets and demand them and say that I will not show you my ID. It is racist. And get it on film. The first person who does this, by the way, at either the Giants game or whatever, send me the video. I will publicize it. No, get it on film of Major League Baseball enforcing Jim Crow 2.0 for will call tickets at the Oakland A's game. I want you to see, because of course it's ridiculous, right? Anyone here watching online, please go try to board a Delta flight or get through security without an ID. Film it, publicize it to the world. We all know exactly what I'm saying here, is that them requiring just to prove your identity when you send in a mail-in ballot, of course it's not racist. It's the opposite of racist, because they're the racist to say that they don't think black people can get identification. Which, by the way, you could kind of turn one of their arguments upside down, which is they're big proponents of reparations. Happy to talk about that tonight if that interests anyone. It's kind of somewhat of a, I think, a pretty simple topic. It's an awful idea. That's the end of the topic. But they're like, we need reparations for descendants of slavery. I'm like, okay, hold on a second. So you think that someone in Fulton County, Georgia, can get their paperwork together to prove they're an eighth generation descendant of slaves, but it's racist to say that they need a voter ID? Like, I don't understand. Which one is it? It's either you can get your paperwork together to prove that you've been here for, which is a really hard thing to do, right? We go to ancestry.com and like print out the entire thing. Like, at some point, it hits this apex of like, no, you're going to have to prove who you are. And there's so many things you can't do without a voter ID. We all know this. Voter ID is extremely popular in our country. Most people think it actually is already the law. I don't know if you've ever worked as an election judge. The way it works in Illinois when I first got my first kind of dose of this is most people will come with their ID voluntarily. An election judge will be like, oh, no, you actually don't need to show it, which is just astonishing and stunning. And so how does this tie into California? Well, we saw the corporate backlash to Georgia, which, by the way, the Delta and the Coca-Cola CEO have been going after all week. They're unbelievably spineless. And the people that frustrate me the most are people that are earning $18 million a year running an American company, some of which are heavily subsidized by our taxpayer dollars. And I have to be lectured by these guys about, it doesn't represent our values at Delta. Like, and I don't know if you saw this guy, Ed Bastian, who did this interview around the Delta law. It looked like a hostage situation, right? He's like wide-eyed, and they like gave him a script, and he just kept saying the same thing over and over again. This does not represent our values. Like, what part of the values does it not represent? Like, the part that getting on an airplane, which is literally the only thing that Delta should be doing, doesn't require not just an ID, but multiple checks of who you are. Ticket identification, verification. If you have any unruling or if you're unrest on an airplane, you get kicked off. And we have to hear from him, the guy that's earning $17 million a year, that elections shouldn't be safe and secure. However, in one of the greatest self-owns, I think, in corporate history, and this is actually how tragic this is, because it shows that they actually don't care about the things that they say they care about, right? I'm sure all of you in San Jose have driven by your neighbors with these huge, like, Black Lives Matter flags. You know what that really says? They're trying to be like, I'm a better person than you are flag. Like, yeah, okay, thank you. You know, virtue signaling to the extreme. And so you go to the Major League Baseball, and they say, okay, we want to fight systemic racism. And the way we're going to fight systemic racism, which doesn't exist, but we're going to fight systemic racism. It doesn't. Fight systemic racism by moving the All-Star game. Let me get this straight. From a 62% black county in downtown Atlanta to a majority young white, like pot smoking college graduate urban community in downtown Denver. Like, that's the way that we're going to reverse systemic racism in America? So it's a $100 million stimulus that would have went to the black community in downtown Atlanta. 30% of all the money spent would have been in black-owned businesses. And that's gone completely. And they go to downtown Denver to go basically do the opposite of what would have actually been helpful for the communities that they say they want to help. And so then they say, well, it's all because of unbelievable injustice. And so then we should hold them accountable for that. Then why don't you cancel all 81 Atlanta Braves games in Major League Baseball in the state of Georgia? Maybe because you actually don't believe this stuff. It's a stunt. That's all it is. And the fact, your stunt is actually going to hurt the community you say you want to help. And this is what goes to a deeper point, which is what actually triggers outrage from corporate America. I'll tell you something that should have triggered outrage from corporate America. When in the midst of a pandemic, with all the issues happening in California, the lockdowns, what does Governor Gavin Newsom decide to do? Sign SB 145, which some of you might be aware of, but everyone should be aware of, which was a handout to the pedophile lobby, basically saying that if you're an accused pedophile, under certain statute, I don't need to get into the specifics of it. They're really disgusting. You can read it yourself. You don't have to register as a sex offender. Basically, like, his big thing is, like, on mid-September, right before an election, I want to go hand out a big win for the pedophile lobby in California. That's the type of governance that all of you are challenging currently. Where was the corporate backlash for that? Right? Where are all the people all of a sudden, this doesn't reflect our values? Like, okay, I would have been with you with that. And so insofar that the corporations are going to be the muscle in our country, they're going to be the people that come in and they enforce the right and wrong, and yet they say nothing about SB 145, and they act as if Georgia is reinstituting Jim Crow-style segregation, which is the exact opposite. It actually expanded early voting and expanded Sunday voting. It's the opposite of what they say it was. Then these corporations have to come under all of our criticism and backlash. And I think that this is a tough thing for those of us that call ourselves conservatives to talk about. We've been leading on this for at least the last year amongst many other terrific people. Corporations are no longer our friends. So those of us on team right thought that the big companies would always share our values because we cut their corporate taxes and we always thought they would create jobs. Now these massive companies are basically the enforcement arm of the Democrat Party. They're acting like Democrat super PACs. And it's coming to a point where those of us that have a specific value system that is rather appealing to the rest of the country, might I add, and every time it's challenged, it's more than popular, then we have to do something against these corporations that are basically more powerful than our own government. And so it's actually fitting to be here in the San Jose area because we're within 20 square miles of a power source that is far more influential than our own government. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the tech companies. And I called on the masters of Menlo Park, and for good reason, because the power center in our country is no longer Washington, D.C. The people that actually set the rules of engagement in our country are right down the street. In fact, there might be some people in this room that work for those companies. And if you're a person with good values and you work in those companies, stay there and do your best to try to reform them as a quiet and silent dissident before they find you, because they will. Seriously, I'm not kidding. It's like a Soviet strategy, like keep your head down, try to infiltrate them. And it's true. Where these companies, and you know what I'm talking, I call it the triangle of tyranny in particular, Facebook, Google, and Twitter, they're all right here. They're right down the street. They have way too much power. And it's not that they have way too much power. That would be one thing. They're abusing the too much power they have. That's even worse. And so I'm a big fan, obviously, of the American founding. I'm a big believer in God-granted liberty, that our rights come from God, not from government. I'm a believer in the natural rights doctrine. And it's why our country was founded and how our country was founded. And out of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, half of them seriously studied divinity in college or in their upbringing. These were Bible-believing, God-fearing people that founded our country. And you read the Federalist Papers and you read the founding documents, they feared tyranny. The entire Constitution was a framework that was written, first and foremost, to try to protect your naturally God-granted rights and not give rules for you. It's fascinating. Just give rules to the government. It's the exact opposite of what you would think you would do. So the founder said the biggest problem we're going to face is a small group of people with no check and balance against them, being able to do what they want to do, however they want to do it, and we're going to have no say. So basically, they created a system that was really, really hard to mess up. Checks and balances, as far as you could see. They derived this from Montesquieu, amongst others. But the point is that if you go into the Federalist Papers, they feared a small group of people being able to suppress your first freedoms. How is that any different than what's happening with the tech companies right now? So I could make an argument of the spirit of the philosophical foundations of our country, that if you actually care about God-granted rights, you should support pushing back against these masters of Menlo Park. And so some people will say, oh, they're private companies. How many people are? They're private companies. We have to let them do whatever they want. Then Clarence Thomas had an amazing piece on this a couple days ago. Clarence Thomas, one of the most amazing Supreme Court justices in American history. And if you want to hold somebody up as a true American success story, as a black American in our country, Clarence Thomas is beyond a great example. Interestingly enough, he's the one person that is missing from the African American History Museum. Isn't that interesting? It's because they don't consider him to be black. It's true. It's because, according to them, identity is only applicable if you're a leftist. Same reason why they call Candace Owens a white supremacist, right? Same reason why it's true. The same because you're actually not part of the identity group if you're a free thinker and you actually want to focus more on character and spirituality and less on skin color or melanin content. I'll get to that in a second. And so Clarence Thomas wrote recently on Monday or Tuesday, that these are common carriers, that these companies connect point A to point B. They try to say that they are a platform, yet they act like publishers. I'll give you an example of this. There are private highways in our country that are built by private investors. For example, from downtown Gary, Indiana to downtown Chicago. Some of you that listen to our podcast have heard me give this example many times. Repetition is the soul of memory. So you'll be able to recite it better than I can, which is that if you want to drive from Gary, Indiana to downtown Chicago, it's called the Chicago Skyway. It's private-owned, private-public partnership. It's against the law to say that anyone is not allowed to ride on that expressway based on viewpoint, race, sexuality, gender. It's an open-access highway. No matter who you are, you can ride on that highway. It's an interstate highway. Well, these are information highways. The same rules that we have that govern the transportation of human beings should be the same rules that govern the transportation of ideas. Open and accessible to all. There must be some form of equilibrium here, because what's currently happening is right down the street. It's funny. Usually I'm talking about Menlo Park and I have to say thousands of miles away. Right down the street. I want you to envision this. There's two different types of tyranny in the country that can exist, that could shut up this gathering right here. Okay? One could walk through the door from the San Jose Police Department and start arresting people. Now, if they started to do that, we could sue. We could say that, well, the First Amendment has a free expression clause and an establishment clause. We'd probably win those lawsuits. And at least we'd have our time in court. We'd have representation. What's the other way they could shut up this gathering? Well, they could say that anyone watching at home or online, you disappear. Now, what's our right of redress of grievance? Someone right down the street, literally 15 minutes away from here, sitting in an office cubicle right now, could press a button and every person watching online would lose the right to hear what I have to say. Like that. And there is no recourse. They'll say, oh, you violated our community standards. That's what they would say. That you violated these arbitrary rules. And there's a great quote from a Soviet dissident. It's exactly what we're living through right now. She said, you will know that tyranny is in America and growing quickly if what you do one day is good and correct, but can be held against you as bad and unacceptable the next day. Think about that. Because it's the constant changing of standards, which is you don't know if your actions are going to destroy your life a week, a year from now. So, for example, they could go back into some video 2 years. They say, well, now all of a sudden it violated your community guidelines. Too much power in such a small group of people. So what do we do about it? Well, I get so fed up with some of these people that represent the Republican Party at times. It's just beyond frustrating. Maybe instead of cutting the corporate tax rate for Google, you should have held Google accountable for their anti-free speech policies and their monopolistic practices against the American people. That would have been probably a good use of time. And so the unfortunately, the window is passed for us to meaningfully do anything from the federal level. The state level, a lot of states can file proper lawsuits, but there's competitors coming up. The problem is you can get parlored, where if you become too big of a threat, you'll have three different companies in 24 hours collude together, almost like a racketeering scheme, and say you can't use our servers and you're not allowed to distribute in our two app stores, like that. I thought we were supposed to create a competitor. Just like that, they can make you disappear. There's a couple. There's rumble.com. I encourage you guys to check it out, rumble.com. It's a YouTube competitor. Maybe Parler will be allowed back on the App Store. That remains to be seen. But the other issue beyond that is, and I encourage everyone watching online and all this, is, and it goes beyond just the tech companies, is every single purchase you make must reflect your values. Everywhere you spend your time, how you use your email, your devices. And look, I think we have to make a very specific goal that by 2024, by the next presidential election, Twitter, Facebook, and Google will be as irrelevant as MySpace. That needs to be the goal. Right? And so how do we go about and do that? A lot of different ways. 75 million people went a certain way. If we stopped using a lot of these platforms, it would make a difference. Now, I want to make a distinction. If you're a content creator, I encourage you to still use these platforms. If you're a content consumer, go seek other platforms. What do I mean? I'm going to keep posting because I'm going to try to reach the unconverted and the people that are searching and seeking, and I don't want to all of a sudden disenfranchise our audience. But those of you that just consume content, disconnect. Find it elsewhere. Go to Rumble instead of YouTube. Go to Parler instead of, or if it exists, but whatever new info, there's some ones coming up. And so there's the issue that I think that we have, though, more than anything else, is that people think that their individual action doesn't actually make a difference. That, well, I'm just one person. And if I'm just one person in a sea of all of this, that's the enemy whispering in your ear, trying to tell you that what you do does not matter. Every action that you make will eventually be reflected into your character. Character comes from the Greek word to engrave, right? Like imprint upon you. And at the very least, act in a way that you want other people to act, and you'll see an amazing thing. All of a sudden, that's exactly what will end up happening. And every single micro action of everyone here tonight or online can make a if every person here tonight stopped using YouTube, that makes a difference. Compound over 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, and your friends the same. And so believe that your own personal actions make a difference. We're going to find competitors, and I actually think the courts are going to start to rule against a lot of these companies. So I want to talk about a couple other things, and then I want to get to some questions, which I really enjoy, which is we're living through a top-down revolution. And this has really never happened before in human history. And I want to be very specific with how I describe it, because we need to kind of take a breath, because if you're like me, you see all of this news coming in so quickly, and it's hard to kind of see where all of this is headed and what exactly is happening here. So let me try to describe it the way I see it, which is we're living through a slow motion revolution that is not like other communist revolutions. This is different. This is the most powerful people that are preemptively striking the common man. I want you to think about that. These are the people that are in charge, that their biggest concern is you. And so they are spending their time, energy, and resources to say, you know, the real problem in America is the person that attends church and that isn't completely into our whole woke worldview. That's who they believe is the real problem. And by the way, one of our podcast listeners said this, and it was such a wise thing. I don't know if they're here or not. I can't remember where they were from. They said, how long until we need woke passports to go? I said, that's exactly where this is headed. Vaccine passports today, woke training passports tomorrow. I kid you not, that will be something that you have to go through, like critical race theory training, to go stay at Marriott hotels. The jokes of today is the reality of tomorrow. Go read the Onion archive 10 years ago. Seriously. No, go read the Onion like 10 years ago. It's like the New York Times. It really is. No, it's like, oh my goodness, that's actually happening. There are men that are playing in women's sports and they're winning. And you know, that used to be something we'd laugh about. Now it's actually an existential threat. So this is a top-down revolution. Not the Cuban revolution or Chinese revolution or Russian revolution where the workers unite up against the aristocracy. No, the aristocracy, the people that are worth $150 billion, they are preemptively striking against you. Why? Because they actually know and they're worried that if they don't strike first, that their plunder is going to be exposed. They have a paranoia that is driving them to try and disenfranchise you from speaking online, from gathering in church, from sharing your values, from existing at all together. And so, put simply, our ruling class hates the country they govern. Think about that. Our ruling class has contempt for the people they're in charge of. Which begs the question, why are you in charge if you hate the people you actually govern? You could say a lot about Donald Trump, but he loved the people that he was tasked to actually govern. He loved them. And you could see it in everything he did. He had respect for the common man. He cared about the muscular class. He didn't have this elitist, snobbish attitude of looking down. It's even worse than elitism or snobbery, by the way. It's worse than that. It's almost, it's best encapsulated in the deplorable comment, because that is just so perfect, the way it, in the context it was said and what it was, which is basically like, if you are not on my staff, and if you don't work for Facebook, Google, YouTube, or Roku, you're a bad person, and I'm going to govern you like that. And so they're preemptively striking the common man, and they're doing it in a variety of different ways. They're doing it in our school system in California now. I'm sure you've seen California teaching curriculum standards. It's technically optional, but it's in the standards to be taught to your kids. Do you guys know about this? Well, that's good. But it's the Aztec god of child sacrifice, a chance that children across California are going to be taught. Now, it's really interesting because I grew up in a setting where I was always told that we want to keep religion out of schools. So now we're bringing Aztec God sacrifice chants into public schools in California, which, by the way, reminds me of this, one of the big lies in America, the separation of church and state. It's nowhere in the Constitution. It's a singular decision from the Warren Court. But let's take their bad, sloppy argument at face value. Let's pretend actually we had separation of church and state in our country. Then let's keep the state out of the church. Right? If that was actually true. But I digress. So In California, they are preemptively striking, and across the country, because they're worried. Their paranoia is actually rooted in truth. They see that there's a pressure cooker about to go off, where all of a sudden, they're no longer going to be in power. Where decent people that want to rebuild families, solve the opioid crisis, actually fix immigration and secure our southern border and take care of our fellow countrymen, challenge the college cartel, be able to speak online properly, increase church attendance, say something or do something about the unspeakable atrocity of 1 million abortions a year in our country. The idea that men can compete in women's sports just because they check a box differently. They are paranoid that if they don't strike first, then all of a sudden they're going to be out of power. But I'm here to tell you tonight, and this is why you're all here and what you're doing, and I'm going to give you three takeaways I think that California freedom lovers need to do even more of, is that this top-down revolution in our country is kind of what I call the great squeeze. So you have the most powerful people that fly around in their Gulfstream jets right down the street, most of them live. And then you have the kind of the grievance class. And I'm going to say this as nicely as I can. The people that are always angry about something, you guys all know them, okay? And I honestly find that they find eternal salvation. I mean that non-kiddingly, because it's the only thing that could solve. And they've been trained at universities to constantly blame the system, not look inwardly, to play the victim, not understand what being a victor is. Instead of making themselves tougher, they want to shatter the world around them. You guys all know those types of people. A lot of them are, you know, conveniently located not far from here in Berkeley. I've dealt with a lot of them. But you have the mobilized grievance class, and then you have the people in charge, the ruling class, that are trying to squeeze you. They're trying to squeeze what has always made America different, which is middle-class Americans that want a couple things. And it's best summarized in something that I call the American promise, which is a promise that is made between the citizens and our rulers. And the promise is this: if I do the right thing over a period of time, I can live an above average way of life. I can raise my children. I can go to church. My children can have a little bit better life than I can, and I can replicate and pass down my values, and my government is not going to be used against me to try to destroy my worldview. That's the American promise. And the great squeeze as it is, which is the bottom and the top, but it's mostly from the top down because they're funding it, right? George Soros is funding a lot of these efforts from the bottom up, is trying to silence every single person here. And they're doing it a variety of different ways. They're doing it forcibly, but I'm here to also give you one piece that you guys can say, you know what? I could do something different, which is the number one form of censorship in our country, self-censorship. You all do it. I do it sometimes, even me, where you might avoid a conversation, where all of a sudden you don't wear that hat into a grocery store. Maybe you do and you're bold, but good luck. We all do it, where you don't always post on the Facebook posts, where you kind of stay out of the conversation. I get it. They want that, though. This is self-censorship by design in our country, where they want people to be their own censors, where they want people to be afraid to contribute to the conversation. Why? Because you're going to be called a racist, right? The fear of being called the R word dominates American political life. That's it. The most powerful, potent force in America right now is being called the R word. Baselessly, with no evidence, but we all know what that means for so many people here. Friendship ender, career ender, kicked out of sororities, kicked out of fraternities, right? As soon as that R word is put upon you, it is the scarlet letter and you are disbanded and put into exile, right? So to try to prevent that from happening, we conform. It says in the scriptures very clearly, do not conform to the ways of the world. Romans 12:2, one of my favorite passages. Thank you. So what do we do about that? We must recognize that self-censorship is a strategy that they're trying to employ on you. That's why events like this matter so much, where we send a statement like, not only are we not going to shut up, we're going to gather in bigger numbers than ever before in San Jose, California. So I want to expand on that even more, but here's three things that you guys have to do as California freedom lovers. Number one, you're already doing it. Play offense. No matter what it is, play offense. The recall is an offensive move. I love it. Stop trying to manage the ever eroding terrain. Go and do the impossible and push forward. That's number one. Number two, represent working people. It is more important than ever to understand that there are two types of economic classes in our country. And it's not an accusation if you're part of the first class. It's not. But generally, the people in this class have a bunch of resentment towards the other, which is the Zoom and the Skype class and the muscular class. And the muscular class in our country are people that work with their hands. They're the ones that delivered your packages all throughout the lockdown. They're the ones that made sure your grocery store shelves were full. They're the ones that drive our Ubers, that the plumbers, the electricians, HVAC, they're the backbone of the American economy. And we look down on those people far too often. And I'm here to tell you right now that the muscular class, the people that didn't go to Stanford, the people that are looked down upon, they are turning in the conservative direction in a way we've never seen before. Represent working people. Number three, this is very important, which is not just never lose hope, but understand things can change. Understand, this is a very important point. If you would have told me, man, if you would have told me that a state like Pennsylvania would have went the way it did in 2016, I'd say no way. State that was so unbelievably blue and to the left. If you would have told me that Florida would vote for Donald Trump with 400,000 vote margin, I would say no way. Things can change negatively, too. I didn't think Georgia was going to go that way or Arizona. Things can change, and they're constantly in motion. So what does it look like for those of you that want to build a life and be here in California? Well, it's incremental progress. It's the small victories will mean big victories. It's never losing hope and not giving up and understanding things can change, and that the working people of California are going to get fed up and want true representation, and playing offense is going to force that hand. And so I am the most inspired when I get to speak in California, and I'm going to compliment all of you. You guys are the most resilient and yet eternally optimistic conservatives in the whole country. No, it really is amazing. And there is this spirit. There is this spirit that we are not going to be crushed without giving it everything we possibly can. So I want to get to questions. I'll close with this point on this, though. People ask all the time. My least favorite question. So someone, if you ask it, I'll lovingly push back against it. Charlie, do you think we're going to win? My least favorite question. You know why? That's not what they're asking. No, no, no. They're not asking me to play Vegas odds maker. They're asking me this. They're just saying it differently. Can I give up? That's what they're asking me. The probability of victory is completely irrelevant to moral action. What is courage? So many young people can't answer that question because we don't teach courage anymore in our schools. Instead, we teach diversity, whatever that is. Courage is doing the right thing when you don't know how it's going to work out. Courage is the proper course of action in pursuing the good, regardless of the potential cost. That's what courage is. Now, why do we have such a lack of courage in our country? Well, because the best way to actually be able to communicate courage is show previously courageous people before you and say, that's a courageous person, act like him, like Winston Churchill, like George Washington, like George S. Patton, all the people that we're removing from our schools. And then people don't even know what good is. Like, oh, good and evil is a spectrum of postmodern. They're just, what are they? It's a construct. Like, yeah, okay. Goodness, you're paying for this? You can get into that too. The time to do the correct thing is always right now. And don't allow yourself to play Vegas odds maker and hedge. Oh, the odds are tough. Like, the victory or the loss is up to the Lord. Your action is actually what matters. The amount that you put in is what you're going to be held accountable for and what you should do. With that, I want to do some questions because that's a lot of fun. I don't know how we're going to do it, but I just want to reiterate. I want to thank our amazing Turning Point USA chapter leaders. These young people are totally amazing. They really are. So.
So hi, Charlie. First, I want to thank you for taking the time to come out to San Jose and making San Jose State part of your campus tour stop.
Thank you.
So my name is Noelle Smith, and I am the president of San Jose State's chapter. My question for you is, as somebody who is not pursuing a career in politics, what is the best way that we can make our voice heard in our schools, families, and communities?
It's a great question. So there's three types of good people, as the great Dennis Prager says. There are those that do nothing, the fighters, and the people that help the fighters. And so no matter what you do in your career, you don't have to go do the, you know, outward political thing, but you find ways in every action you make to at least help the fighters at the very least. So depending, what are you going to be studying, or what are you passionate about? What's your skill?
I'm pursuing my career in speech pathology.
Well, that's a really good, that's, first of all, it's awesome and it's super needed. In fact, we know someone who's an unbelievable human being who's a speech pathologist. Understand, first from just a Christian perspective, everything's a ministry opportunity. And so Martin Luther famously said, the best way to spread the gospel, as if, let's say, you're a shoemaker, is not to put a cross into every shoe that you make. Instead, it's to show the grace, the mercy, the compassion of the gospel in your work and what you do. And the same I will say as a conservative. So let me say this, be unafraid to tell people what you believe and why you believe it. You will get judged, and there might be times that you might lose your job because of it. Not trying to scare you, it's just the way it is. But you'd be surprised that when you stand in the line, the Lord works in amazing ways. And I just want to just say that for anyone here. But here's what's going to happen. Every single person here has to realize that most people who consider themselves on the left, they know very few people who would self-describe as conservatives. And the reason that they're on the left sometimes is they have a stereotype of what that person is until they actually meet a human being that is the exact opposite of what they would have thought. Someone that is factual, someone that is calm, someone that hopefully respects their opinions and their right to say it. And so I hope that's somewhat helpful. And if you have children, please homeschool your children, which I'm a very big fan of. Big fan of homeschooling, and awesome. And then also in your communities, I got a beautiful email. We're on about over 100 radio stations now, and we got an email from a listener in Chicago, which I know very well. I grew up there. And she said, "Charlie, I was inspired by you. I got my whole family out to vote for a local community college election, Elgin Community College. And the pro-freedom, pro-American candidate who was fighting against critical race theory won by 8 votes. 8 votes. And so her family helped make the difference, never voted before in a provisional election. And that is the fourth largest community college district in Illinois. And that now is not going to have critical race theory taught in Elgin public schools. 8 votes, right? 8 votes. It's amazing. And so I just want to encourage you that every point of action matters. And no matter what you do, you're involved, whether it's publicly or behind the scenes. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Charlie. My name's Caleb, and I kind of noticed you trashed my campus, University of California, earlier in your speech. That's okay.
Berkeley or?
Berkeley.
Oh,
Berkeley.
Well, it deserves
not
to be trashed,
Stanford.
But that's okay.
So. Palo Alto City College.
I don't hold you accountable for that. But.
No, it's okay. I study political science and public policy. And voting is something that's super dear to my heart. We just had a Voters' Choice Act, which revolutionized voting and how it's done in California, a couple of counties. And as one of the youngest election center managers, I had conversations with my team and kind of the political theory of how voting should be done and how these rights should be had in respect to, you know, voter IDs, mail-in ballots and things like that. And some of the things that I agreed with was that, you know, voter ID is necessary. It just makes sense.
Yes.
But something that's with voter IDs, like any right, is that voting is a right, same as free speech is a right. And, you know, guns is a right. If, you know, I want to get a gun and I'm a law-abiding citizen, I should be able to, you know, go in and get a gun, pass the background check. If I want to speak my mind on, you know, Facebook, you know, the irony, but you get the point. But the thing about mail-in ballots is that I've seen a lot of conservatives, you know, don't know too much about mail-in ballots and, you know, kind of shy away from that because of the voter ID. You know, it's not necessary. I think in Georgia, that's changing. But considering, you know, the hypothetical that, you know, mail-in ballots do have a voter ID attached to them, they are recognizable. You know, they could track who you are and that you are the person that is turning that mail-in ballot. What's your view on that stance? Should that be allowed, or, you know, mail-in ballots expanded throughout the country? Or?
So let me ask you a question. In California, do they require a voter ID for a mail-in ballot?
No.
Okay.
No.
Got it. So that's a problem. And I'm also a huge opponent of ballot harvesting, which is a massive problem here in California.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Look, let me tell you my stance on voting, which is, I think, rather mainstream. It is a right. And since it's a right, we must go above and beyond to make sure that other people's vote is not disenfranchised by fraud, by treachery,
That's right.
by shenanigans. That's why I'm so focused on the integrity issue of it, because it's actually more important than just boarding an airplane or renting a movie. I think we got to get rid of voting month in our country. This idea that voting is open for 30 plus days, I think, is absolutely ridiculous. Number one. Number two, the outside of just voting, and you asked a great question, the one of the bigger issues is voter registration and cleaning up the voter rolls. So these are conflated sometimes, and I've done a lot of study on this, which is that if you're going to have universal mail-in voting for every single person on the mail-in balloting list, it includes people that might have moved, people that are dead, deceased, people that are no longer active voters. So you're going to be sending a massive amount of ballots that then are basically up for grabs, right? And so in California, it does not require an ID, which then would open the gateway for potential nonsense and tomfoolery and all of that. So more than anything else, if you say, Charlie, what does a successful election look like? I'm willing to come to the middle. I'm willing to say, let's do what Florida does. Florida has safe and secure elections. Florida had millions of people vote, including mail-in, but they do not have no excuse mail-in voting. You have to give a reason. It has signature and identification for mail-in. And if you try to vote twice, you're automatically getting convicted for 5 to 10 years. Now, ideally, I'd like to limit mail-in voting for like super low. But here's the thing in Florida. Highest turnout, real high they've ever had, super secure. I think you must have all your election results in by 9:30 on election night. No more waiting weeks to count ballots. And finally, in Florida, they are sticklers in the voter registration process, that they find people on the rolls and they compare them, what a concept, with the people that have passed away and then the voter rolls, and then they correct them every quarter. Like, not that difficult to do, right? You look at the death certificates, look at the voter rolls, and then you clean them, which every county should do. Does that help clarify, answer
the question? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Gracie Gillette. I'm also with the homeschool crowd
awesome.
Over here.
Thank you for being here.
I know you already covered this a little bit, but I was wondering what advice you had for young conservative teens who are wanting to start their own social media platform and spread their beliefs
yes.
that are being censored.
It's a great question. First of all, if you desire to be famous, you're doing it for the wrong reason. The thing I can't stand the most is these people that want to be famous more than wanting to be good. And that's a very big problem. I'm just trying to just to hear me out, because there's a lot of people that are able to go viral very quickly now. And it's bad for you. It's bad for everyone. The way the incentive structure is there. That's number one. Now, do you mean platform for yourself, or do you just like a page?
I mean,
or
as I have personally experienced it from TikTok mostly, because
yeah.
it's very... They shadow ban. They ban you from posting, from going live. They've banned lots of people from. Yeah. They've just banned their accounts. Period. Just there are lots of conservative people.
Yeah.
And they are being majorly censored right now. So I was wondering what advice you had for.
Yeah, I'm not actually on TikTok. Go figure. people ask me, "Are you going to go on TikTok soon?" But yeah, I don't think so. I don't have any specific advice. I'm just going to give more general caution to young people that are in this kind of space. You'll be miserable if you get into this for the wrong reasons. I'm telling you right now, the social media influencer thing is not a good thing for 19-year-old, 20-year-olds. It's not. And so unless you're grounded and you're doing it for the right reasons, which, you know, I'm positive you are, I'm just saying more generally. So, but there's something to be said about the way these platforms are or, and I'll just talk more broadly about the platforms. I'm provocative in this way. I don't think young people should get smartphones till they're 18, just so we're clear, right? Just so we're, you know, I think that parents should withhold smartphones till they're 18. They're more powerful than AR-15s. They are. No, it's true. These things are designed by bad people right down the street to chemically addict your children to these phones, and they reevaluate their well-being, their identity, who they are, and their decisions, try to go sell your children more advertisements of things that don't matter and they don't need. One of the greatest blessings that I had, again, this is not, I'm not, you know, talking about you in particular, I'm just saying one of the things that I had growing up, which is an amazing thing, where the iPhone was not really popular till I was like 18 years old. It was kind of this like fringe thing. I thank God every day. It was this amazing thing. Did you know we went to high school and I had conversations with people? No, it was actually unbelievable. It was like 10 years ago. No, and I see these young people and they're like Snapchat and all this. I say, I'm so glad I didn't have any of that in high school. I say, what a robbery of youth we have done in our country. And I'm going to say this as, you know, not, parents, you got it. Like, if you think that's the best thing and people say, well, I need to be able to call my kid in case of emergency, then go buy the Jitterbug, okay? It's like on TV. It's like this big, right? Or it's like all my friends have one. Still, not a great thing. Anyway, again, I'm provocative on this for a reason, because it's destroying our humanity, And if you guys go spend half a day, you know what's really interesting? You go meet the tech CEOs that built these mobile platforms. They don't let their own kids use them. Yeah. They don't let their own kids use the stuff that many of your children are using or young people are using. And if it feels chemically addictive, it is. It's built for dopamine rushes and dopamine lows. And that's the way the algorithms are actually built. So not exactly sure how to help you on the TikTok thing. I'm just, I would encourage you one thing that just, and I'm not saying it's you, just anyone in particular, just think more broadly outside of social media. There's a big, broad, beautiful world out there. And I guarantee you, this is a rule of thumb for every young person. The less time you spend on those cyborg devices, the happier you will be. I'm telling you, these things are designed to destroy your humanity. So anyway, thank you. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Josiah Christensen. I'm homeschooled.
It's a great name, Josiah.
My question is a question that's been bothering me for a while. I just can't figure out the answer. What do you think is a bigger threat to America, the Chinese Communist Party or the radical left?
That's a great question. It's a good question, Josiah. What's the difference, right? Like, I mean, that would be the better question. So, you're a smart young man. Here's a fun thought exercise. You're Xi Jinping. Who are you cheering for? Well, no, you own Hunter Biden, let's be very clear. So, amongst other people. So, no, but seriously, who are you cheering for? If you're Xi Jinping, you would fund BLM Incorporated. You would go fund all these groups. They're tearing America apart at its seams. And there's evidence to show that the CCP is in partnership with some of these organizations and these groups. But I will say this. It is the radical left. It is. If you made me choose, it is the radical left. The radical left gets some of their help from the Chinese Communist Party. America will fall from within. It will not fall externally for now. It will be an internal, self, quasi-suicidal decision where we just decide we no longer want to be great. We want to be comfortable. And as soon as that happens, we'll fall. And so I'll just say this to kind of close the point. It's tougher to fight internal fights. It was easier when it was the walled off evil Soviet Union halfway across the world, right? It's harder when it's your local university, your local high school, your local school board, your local corporation. That's a lot harder. It's a lot more difficult. And so I will say this, that you're thinking in things the right way, but they're also, China's cheering for the radical left every single day. Great question, Josiah. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, my name's Angelica. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
I'm a molecular bio student at San Jose State. I can't say I enjoy it, especially when on the first day of your genetics class, they ask you what your pronouns are. It's kind of weird. And then I guess my question to you is, So Philippians 4:6-7, it talks about be anxious for nothing, but in everything give prayer and like, and then think on good things. But as much as I want to keep my eyes focused on that, it's so difficult not to be so shifted onto what's going on in the world. So how do I accomplish that and also be in touch with what's going on in the world? Because if I just decide to focus on this passage, am I just turning the world off? Like, no. How do I show compassion and not get caught up at the same time? So that's my question. And then another question is, who's your favorite biblical character and what's your favorite passage?
Wow, that's a great... I'll answer that one first. My favorite passage of the Bible is James 1. It's terrific, which it says very clear... I mean, it's phenomenal. It covers persecution, it covers wisdom, and it also covers faith. Three things that I think are so incredibly important in the scriptures. And it says very clearly in James 1:5 that to ask God for wisdom and he will give generously. And it's a beautiful passage. Wisdom is the knowledge of things that never change. There's practical knowledge and eternal knowledge. Wisdom is far more important than practical knowledge. We don't teach our children wisdom in schools anymore because there's no God, no wisdom. Therefore, they know a bunch of stuff, but they really know nothing. And so that's what happens in our universities. So favorite biblical character, that's a really good question. I would probably say in the Old Testament, I'm drawn to the story, not because of his moral issues, but the story of Samson I really enjoy because it's one that I think it's someone that is after God's own purpose and was willing to contest and fight for God's purpose in a very specific way. I love Moses, and I love his ability to be able to lead God's chosen people, and obviously writing the first five books of the Bible. So I could go on further. And then I love the writings of King Solomon. Not exactly a big fan in his after his life choices later in life, which we can not exactly good. Proverbs is one of my favorite books. So your question is about being anxious and nothing, right? So I would have to say this, and again, I'm not a pastor or a theologian. I just can tell you how I interpret the scriptures. I believe very heavily that faith without works is dead, and that our awareness and involvement of what's going on is critical to the Christian walk. Now, we must understand that God is sovereign, God is in control, but also if we believe that we do not have a call to spread the gospel and be salt and light and everything, then I think that's an excuse. And I don't buy into that at all whatsoever. I will say this, though, that it says to be anxious and nothing because we are born new in Christ Jesus. And that's exactly right, that you should interpret everything that's going on in the new cycle through that prism. That you have eternal life, that you're just here temporarily. So that should give you comfort, and that should give you peace, right? And that should give you a point of understanding that I'm going to do everything I possibly can do. But for me personally, in Christ Jesus who died for us, then we have life eternal, and we have hope springs eternal, right? Paul does not want us to be eternally worried or nervous about every little turn of events. We should be involved and engaged and understand that Jesus is 100% grace and 100% truth. And so I hope that's somewhat helpful. And let me just say this for everyone here. We have a lot of different people here. The gospel of Jesus Christ is best summarized in four words, three words, two words, one word. And I could do this as quickly as possible. It's Jesus took my place in four words, three words, him for me, two words, substitutionary atonement. One word, grace. What is grace? Well, let's first go through what justice is. Justice is getting what you deserve. You stole something, you're going to jail, the judge says, that's it, you're done. Mercy is getting less of what you deserve. Stole something, go in front of a judge, and you get 6 months instead of 6 years. Grace is something totally different, and only the Christian faith offers grace, which is you go in front of a judge because you stole something, you're about to go to jail, and someone pops up, he says, no. I'll serve the prison sentence for him. That's grace. It's a sacrifice that was made for you so that you can live free. And I encourage everyone, if not already, to give your life to Jesus. It is the most incredible, renewing, important thing that every human being can do. And if there's ever any interest, I'm hardly a scholar on this, but people say that it's nothing more than a mythology. I'm happy to walk through the rational, logical case for the resurrection and for Christ's testimony and what his life and what he did, if there's interest in that. So I hope that someone helps summarize your question.
Thank you.
All right, we'll get to one or two more. So pick your best question.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for coming out tonight. Appreciate it. My name's Spencer. I'm the president of the Pepperdine College Republicans.
Awesome. That's a long drive. Jeez.
Well, right now we're all locked down, so up here for the semester. But it is historically a very conservative university. But recently I just wrote an article exposing my university for actually using student funds to push critical race theory.
Unbelievable.
And they're giving out copies of Robin DiAngelo's White Fragility.
Are you serious?
Yes. Our student government and our student wellness advisory board, this is with student money, at a historically Christian conservative university. So my question is, what can students and parents do when this anti-white ideology of critical race theory is being pushed on us by our institutions?
First of all, you exposing it deserves praise. So thank you for doing that. Okay. And I hope everyone online and everyone here and the lots of people listening on our podcast, go contact Pepperdine University tonight. I think that would be a good thing. If everyone here just sent in an email, because here's what bothers me about that example. I've met a lot of people from Pepperdine. You know, they go around to conservative donors raising money under the pretense that they're a conservative school.
That's right.
You know that.
Yep.
That a lot of the people at Support Turning Point USA are asked for money. They say, hey, Charlie, what do you think of Pepperdine? I say, I think they're fine. But they're lying to their donors, what you're telling me.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So you're trying to tell me that Pepperdine has Robin DiAngelo's book?
Yes, that's right. With our money, student money that is mandatory that we have to pay every semester.
So just so you guys, Robin DiAngelo is the worst when it comes to this topic. I mean, it is pure racism, pure bigotry, and it's all about caring more about skin color than character. That's basically her entire thesis, which we used to call that racism in our country, and we still should call that racism in our country when you care more about skin color than character. So what do you do about it? Make more noise. Here's what you should do. What's the name of the biggest building on campus? Whose last name is it? Go name one name.
Elkins. Elkins.
Find that family and write them a letter. FedEx it to them and say, did you know that Pepperdine University is funding critical race theory with your millions and millions of dollars at Pepperdine? Did you know that? Go. All the donors are probably public at Pepperdine. Go write them all letters. You're a current student and just say, you know, XYZ donor, did you know this? And have all the photocopies, have all your facts, don't embellish anything or else they'll use that against you and your whole case will blow up. Be precise and then say student fees, mandatory, Robin DiAngelo 1619 project, whole thing, and then say, did you know this? And then I'm telling you right now, you'll start to see the impact you're making. These universities, the only way you can get to these universities is go mobilize the people that finance them. And that's a playbook for all of you guys. Go just find the names of the buildings. Go look up if they're usually, by the way, all the people that, this actually is an awful thing. All the people that fund all your schools are conservatives, okay? Almost all of them. They voluntarily give their money away so that, you know, their children can learn to hate the country. But like, no, it's true. But go find, because you know what? Most of these donors have no idea this is what's going on. No idea. So you're a current student. Go find them and create more noise. Because what you just told me is unbelievable. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Charlie.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right. Well, we'll try to get to two more, but I don't want to keep people too late. Yes.
Hello, my name is Mary Catherine. So I just had a question. Sorry, I'm trying to word it in my head. So there are places like Turning Point USA who I highly respect, and they go into these college campuses that are highly liberal, and they change the culture. If I were to go to apply to college, I'm going to be in high school next year, but if I were to think about colleges...
You speak super well.
Thank you.
By the way, how old are you?
14.
Well, thank you for being here tonight. It's awesome. It's terrific.
I personally would like to help, change the culture. If I'm going to apply to college, would I want to go to a solid Christian college and get an education, or would I want to go to a liberal college and try to change the culture?
What a great question. So, here's the best first question you must ask. Why do you want to go to college? Right? That's the first question, because not everyone should. And then ask yourself the question, what are you good at? You guys don't ask that question very often, right? So they're like, what's your passion? Dumbest question ever. Doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant. Passions come later. Find your skill. Everyone's good at something. I could tell you things I'm good at and things I'm not good at. Find your skill, the passion will follow. Once you find your skill, then find the school. If that skill necessitates a certification, maybe it's a lawyer, maybe you're good at writing and you want to be a lawyer, maybe you're good at helping people, you want to be a nurse, maybe you're good at instructing, you want to be a teacher. Find a school at the highest level for the least amount of money that can graduate you the quickest, that can then not completely deteriorate your values and make you question everything that you know to be true.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you.
Hello, sir. I'd just like to say it's an honor to be here tonight.
Thank you.
And I hate to end this on a bad note, but...
Is it a bad note?
I didn't know them too well, but I found out today that a student at my school committed suicide.
Oh, jeez.
And his friends and family are saying it's because of the restrictions and lockdowns and the incessant dehumanization that we've all had to suffer. So my question to you is, how do you feel about the skyrocketed suicide rate in the country due to these murderous lockdowns? And what do you think would be the best way to combat this perpetual tragedy, especially when there are so many who, as I would say, are addicted to these COVID restrictions and don't want to give them up, the same way a child might not want to give up their baby blanket?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, my heart goes out to the family. I get hundreds of emails about this stuff on our podcast. I just did a whole podcast on this on Monday if you guys want to hear me extensively. First of all, law of averages. Someone in this room right now is dealing with depression. Someone is. So let me tell you a couple things. Number one, you matter to more people than you might have convinced yourself of. And you need to hear that. I don't know who you are, someone here. Meaning you, stop thinking about yourself. You actually matter to more people. They might not tell you. They might not express it. So before you start to convince yourself that you don't matter to you, you should know that you actually matter to more people. That's number one. Number two, you're a lot tougher than you might think. That's number two. You're a lot tougher than you might think. That you have the capacity to endure a lot more than you might personally understand. Number three, what you're living through right now is very tough for a variety of different reasons. So don't be too hard on yourself in this way. Take a deep breath, and this is number three or four. Find the courage to communicate everything that you're feeling to someone directly in the eyes, not on phone, not on text, that has wisdom. It could be a pastor, it could be a parent. Wisdom is the most important thing to search. Because I find more times than not, those situations happen because people do not clearly communicate and people stay too festered up. This is a serious epidemic in our country, and our leaders in both parties are completely ignoring it. How do we end this cycle? I think there's a lot of different things contributing to it. I think our smartphones are absolutely huge culprits. I think the dehumanizing agenda of these lockdowns have been one of the worst things imaginable. And I also think that there's a stigma about the communication of it, and there is this belief built in the self-esteem movement that is an unrealistic pattern and narrative that is taught to our young people all the time, which is that you're perfect the way you are, you do not have to change. You understand that has the opposite intended effect. I never said you were perfect, I said you're tougher than you think you are. In fact, I think most young men do that unthinkable decision because they're not challenged enough. I think most young men do that because they've never been looked in the eyes and say, you're way better than this. Come on, let's push you to new limits. The opposite actually happens, is they get emasculated, feminized. And women have different issues completely, by the way. It's depression, meaning it's self-image issues, and actually they're forced to be men, and that's a different problem. It's true. And that is way too much pressure for young women in our country. I can go through that a different time. But young men, in particular, they need a purpose and a call to adventure. And without a purpose or a call to adventure, then they're going to just be grown infants. And a grown infant eventually will ask themselves the question, what's the point? And our society, parents and pastors need to say, no, there's more than a point. You need purpose. Purpose comes from the Greek word telos, where we get the word telescope for, which means far out in the distance, North Star, something I can see, I can always try to achieve. What is my direction? What am I able to say I'm doing every single day? And what we've done is the opposite. Lock you down in the basement energy drinks and video games, stay up to 5 o'clock in the morning, and somehow that is going to give you fulfillment. And we're wondering why more young people in California have committed suicide than died of the Chinese coronavirus. And I'm here to tell you, and you guys get it because you're here tonight, our leaders have failed this generation on this issue. They have abandoned young people in America. And I hear this way too often, and it's happening at such a pace. And here's the call to action. The second thing, every person in this room knows or suspects somebody who's going through that right now. Call them and text them right now. Because I'm telling you, I've lost dear friends to that unspeakable act. And it's beyond a period of hell, and I use that word intentionally, for you if you did nothing. And that's something that I hope everyone understands, that it's a call to action, every person in this room. I'm glad you said that. I hope it's somewhat helpful. And every person needs to play a role in that here tonight. It's very, very important. God bless you. Thank you. Okay, this will be the last question. I'm sorry, guys. This will be the last question.
All right. I can't live without Major League Baseball, and I can't live with myself for watching it. How do we square reality with corporate boycotts? 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, just stop watching baseball. I don't really understand the point. Like, you can't live like it's like medication or something. Or
it was
like
a metaphor.
Huh?
It was a metaphor.
Okay. Yeah. But look, the point is like, yeah, we all have to sacrifice something, right? I mean, Major League Baseball doesn't represent our values. You can watch it if you want. My decision is I'm never watching baseball again. Like, have a nice life. Like, you know, that's the way I am. So, look, I think that the spirit of the question is very good. And I think that you have to understand that we need to start sending a message to these companies and to these institutions. Either that or they're going to continue to be the muscle of the Democrat Party. Thank you. Okay, so I want to just close with this, everybody. I have never been more optimistic about our future. I know that sounds, what are you talking about? What we are seeing is an amazing, almost revival and awakening in America. The truth is on our side, everybody. And it is up for us to stand clearly and courageously. And tonight is a statement to the ruling class that we'll be locked down no longer, that we will be silent no longer, and we are not going to take it anymore. And so I just want to tell all of you, thank you for your commitment. This state, I'm so inspired by California conservatives every single day. It's a truly incredible thing. And I want to end how I started. Mike McClure is an amazing American pastor. Support this man and support this church and start local. Take back the city of which you are in. Believe our best days are ahead. Take education very seriously. Support your Turning Point USA groups. Do not self-censor. In fact, say, I'm going to be louder than ever. Remember, we believe that speech is the remedy to our problems. And I'm telling you right now, if we do this, 10 years from now, we are going to be celebrating and winning in ways we have never seen before. Our best days are ahead. God bless you guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Please support us if you can at charliekirk.com/support. God bless you. Speak to you soon.